Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Coming up in just a moment, I want to kind of take a closer look at Jamal Adai, the new defensive backs coach of Georgia, hired away from West Virginia. I think there's a lot to like about this hire. We will talk more about that coming up in just a moment. Before that, let me get into what happened yesterday afternoon, the SEC Network, the 2021 Georgia schedule release. I think this kind of stuff is fun. Generally speaking, the more hyperbole you can attach to something, the better I'm going to enjoy it. The more of a spectacle you can make something, the more enjoyable I think it's going to be. I just like that kind of stuff. I like the idea of a schedule release on television. Now, I also like the flip side of this. In previous years for the SEC, when we've kind of always known the dates, known when Georgia was going to be where when it comes with SEC opponents, it gives you kind of an opportunity to plan. Many people love making those travel plans, you know, year plus in advance, and tradition times, if you want to get a hotel room in these small SEC towns, you've got to be able to do that. We're obviously living in a little bit different age right now, so we're doing the opposite of that. Many people not traveling to games at the moment for obvious reasons, and scheduled a little bit of a work in progress a year ago, but the SEC let us know that for this upcoming season, the intent is to get back to normal. That means 8 conference games, 4 non-conference games, you know, home and home stuff taking place again, both the good and the bad non-conference games, the ones we get excited about the early portion of the season, the other kinds of games that I think most of us by now could do without, directional schools, you know, things along those lines. But nonetheless, the SEC let us know yesterday that they are going to try to get back to business as usual, at least on the field. We'll find out about the fans and the stands and what's happening around the games probably at a later day, but a 2021 SEC schedule that kind of gets back to normal. And when it comes to Georgia in particular, I think we found out two things. That we essentially reaffirmed two things that we already knew, and I want to kind of explain this way. Let me show you the schedule on the screen as it was shared by Georgia on social media. We'll run through this. You got Clemson on September 4th, UAB on September 11th, South Carolina back to an early season date, September 18th. You got Vanderbilt on the road at September 25th. Arkansas, a year after Georgia went to Fayetteville. Hogs come here to Athens on October 2nd, Georgia on the road again at Auburn on October the 9th, it's Kentucky on October the 16th, Florida traditional date there on October 30th, Missouri after that on November 6th, then it's at Tennessee, directional school, Charleston Southern, and then Georgia Tech to close out the season, the Yellow Jackets back on the schedule. So here's what I think was reaffirmed yesterday, and hold this, can I see the schedule again for a second, because I want to walk through this just real quickly. One of the things that was reaffirmed is that Georgia's status as a true, legitimate, shortest of shortlist national championship contenders is absolutely once again validated by the schedule that was put out. Because if you think about it for a moment, and just for the sake of conversation, let's assume a Georgia win against Clemson, which is a big assumption, but we're making that assumption right now to just kind of further the conversation. If you'll give Georgia a win against Clemson, look what comes after that. You've got UAB Group of Five program. You've got South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Auburn, three teams both breaking in new coaching staffs. You've got Arkansas and Kentucky, two teams that Georgia easily beat on the road a year ago. Arkansas by, what, 27 points? Kentucky by, what, 11 points? So Georgia got easy wins on the road against both those teams, gets a chance to play them at home this year. In other words, if Georgia can get past Clemson in the first game of the season, which is a big if, but if we just, for the sake of conversation, say that could happen, then all of a sudden you're looking at a scenario on October the 30th after a week off where Georgia is, I would say it's fairly easy to assume that Georgia could be undefeated, sporting a very impressive ranking, maybe, you know, one of the highest rankings in the country, taking on Florida for all the marbles there in the SEC East. And then you look beyond that, there's really no huge challenge that steps up in the aftermath of the Florida game on the Georgia schedule. You know, I made a case on the page of DogNation.com yesterday, this Missouri game the week after Florida may be worth watching a little bit. You know, Missouri did surprisingly win 5 games a year ago, scored scored 40 or more points three times. But Georgia also easily beat the Tigers in Columbia last year. You've got, you know, Tennessee, new coaching staff, obviously Charleston Southern, Georgia Tech. You don't think much about either one of those programs. So the first thing that's validated, and you can take that off the screen now. Thank you very much. The first thing that's validated here is that a national championship contender, Georgia, got what I believe is a national championship schedule. This is not going to be viewed as one of the toughest schedules in the country. Not the way that some of those SEC West schedules are going to be, or, you know, maybe, you know, Florida, who's got Alabama coming up on its schedule. More on that in a moment. When you think about tough schedules in the country, the Georgia Bulldogs are just not going to show up there. And for once, that actually may be a good thing. The fact that, you know, Georgia gets a chance to navigate, because schedule matters. Who you play matters. That's all a part of the equation when it comes to winning a national championship. And the Georgia schedule yesterday, seeing how the games are laid out in the order in which they're going to be presented, you realize, wow, there's nothing about this schedule that obviously disqualifies Georgia from winning the title. There are big games that have to be won, but listen, when you look at the two big games, and that's kind of the other thing that's kind of validated by what you saw yesterday, is that the two games that we kind of already had circled, they really, really matter to Georgia. Clemson to start the year, Florida coming up on October 30th. These games really, really matter. Once, much like it was in 2020, what you did against Alabama, what you did against Clemson, what you did against Florida was going to determine all the marbles for that season. All of a sudden for 2021, it's a very similar storyline. You're simply replacing the Alabama game with the Clemson game. But when you think about having to play big games like that, and frankly, no national championship contender should play any fewer than at least two measuring stick games like what Clemson provides and like what Florida provides. When you think about this, you've got an entire offseason to get ready for Clemson. And by the way, don't discount the presence of someone like Will Muschamp in Athens, who, as former head coach at South Carolina, played Clemson every single year. Now, I didn't always have success against Clemson. In fact, I guess he never did. But nonetheless, this is a guy who's, you know, seen a lot of those Clemson game films over the years. That's institutional knowledge he might be able to bring to the table. So, yes, the Clemson game looms as big as we ever thought it did, but you've got an entire offseason to get ready for it. And the Florida game on October 30th, likely to decide the SEC East, that looms every bit as big as we ever believed that it could be, but you've got a fairly easy on-ramp to get ready for that game. And I use fairly easy in air quotes because obviously anything can happen in football, but you've got to play somebody. And the somebodies that Georgia plays prior to that game against Florida, I think gives Georgia every opportunity, I believe, to be ready for the Gators in Jacksonville on October the 30th. Now, let me slightly shift gears here and give you a couple more thoughts related to the schedule that came out yesterday, both for Georgia and the rest of the SEC. I think it's very interesting that the Florida-Alabama game, Bama going to Gainesville, takes place, at least based on the schedule, yesterday on September the 18th. Think about this for a moment. This is a Florida team that lost four games a year ago. The magical season, the one they finally got over the Georgia hump, the one in which, you know, they won the SEC East, something that Dan Mullen wanted to do. This magical season that Florida supposedly enjoyed ended up really kind of being the kind of year where they lost four games. Not a great year. So there have been a lot of losses around Gainesville to kind of close out the 2020 season, including a pretty embarrassing bowl loss. And all of a sudden, you got to follow that up now with an Alabama game early on the season, a game in which obviously we expect Alabama to be a pretty substantial favorite, even on the road against Florida. Let's watch for some early season restlessness amongst Gators fans who, frankly, did not finish the 2020 season off the way they wanted to already have a loss on your schedule before the month of September is done. Boy, that could get kind of interesting in terms of the just the restlessness amongst Florida fans there when it comes to that. Similar story for Auburn, who Georgia does play October the 9th. You know, that's the new kind of scheduled date for that Auburn game. Typically on the road is a place that you would think, you know, Georgia could have some trouble. Georgia lost there in 2017, won a hard-fought game there in 2019. We don't quite know yet how many fans are even going to be in the stands for that game when Georgia plays Auburn on October the 9th. But it's also interesting to note what Brian Harsin, the new Auburn coach, and his, I would say, pretty impressive coaching staff that he's put together there, what they have to do prior to playing Georgia and hosting Georgia on October 9th. They've got two huge road games. You've got LSU in the early portion of the Auburn schedule. Auburn hasn't won there since 1999. Assuming non-conference games do actually take place this year, Auburn's going to Penn State. Now, Penn State wasn't very good in 2020, but that's obviously a pretty tough road game. So a difficult start to the Brian Harsin era, and it could be, if those road games go the wrong direction for Auburn, which is a strong possibility, it could be an atmosphere around Jordan-Hare Stadium where a lot of Auburn fans are either there and sitting on their hands or just not choosing to be in that stadium at all, because this may be one of those, you know, kind of ugly first years for Harsin if he's already got two losses before Georgia even comes in there. And then finally this, I thought it was kind of interesting that there wasn't a lot of chatter, you know, given to the fact that Georgia, after missing its home game with Georgia Tech a year ago to close out this upcoming season, will now be back in Atlanta again. Georgia hasn't hosted Georgia Tech since 2018, now won't get a chance to do that until 2022. I really don't care either way. Georgia hasn't lost in Atlanta since 1999, and the ACC, I guess, is just kind of pretending that last year didn't happen when it comes to its full scheduling model. You've got Pitt, by the, for instance, going to Tech now 3 years in a row, I believe. They're just essentially skipping last year in terms of a scheduling model all the way around. But Georgia, for now, will have missed its home game against Georgia Tech and be back at Tech, not 2 years in a row, but two games played in a row in that series will be in Atlanta. But that's probably not all that important. What does matter is this. We saw the Georgia schedule laid out yesterday. We saw each game and the date in which they'll be played. The big games, you already know them. It's Clemson to start the year. It's Florida on October 30th. But everything else around that is quite, quite manageable, I believe, for UGA. So if it can show up and be ready to perform in the games that matter most, a national championship contender, I think yesterday's schedule announcement further validates that truth for UGA. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Really appreciate you being with us, and cannot wait to have a fun show today. Former Georgia wide receiver Terrence Edwards on the way. There's big news around the SEC. We will talk about all of that. And, of course, a big thank you right now to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp who make all of this possible. Listen, the subject matter that we deal with on this show is obviously a lot of fun to discuss. The rumors and the rumblings and grumblings around college football and how Georgia gets better and how Georgia wins a national championship, those are all really fun things to discuss. What oftentimes is not quite as much fun to discuss is the divorce process. But in an audience the size of ours, you know, tens upon tens of thousands of people listening and watching every single day, the one thing that we know is there are a substantial number of you, just based on obvious statistics, a substantial number of you who are finding yourself in this situation right now. And as I've told you before, listen, this is too much, too scary, too challenging to go through by yourself. You want to put your trust in my friends at Meriwether and Tharp, and they truly are my friends. You want to put your faith and your trust in them. They're your source for Georgia divorce. And one of the things they're going to do for you is before you even become a client, they're going to prove their value. If you go to their website, theatlantadivorceteam.com, that's theatlantadivorceteam.com. If you go to that website, you're going to see free blog posts. You're going to see podcasts, a lot of free resources. You could even get a free initial consultation with one of their attorneys. And then after that, you make the decision to put them to work for you, and they become a strong advocate on your side. They are your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. Meriwether and Tharp brings Dog Nation Daily to you here today. All right, before we get Terrence Edwards, let's get ready to go around the doghouse here today, delivered by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And I want to dive in here just a little bit to the coaching hire that Georgia made yesterday, announcing Jamal Adai as the new Georgia defense backs coach. Obviously, the stats for what West Virginia did a year ago make this look like a very good hire. West Virginia, number one in the country in passing yards allowed per game a season ago. And the context around that situation in Morgantown, I think, makes it even better. The fact that they had a weird situation where their defensive coordinator had to be let go of. You had a kind of a redistribution of coaching duties. Adai stepped up, took on more responsibility before, and I would say really kind of knocked it out of the park in terms of the work that he did there for that program. So there's a lot to like based on the background there at Morgantown. But when it comes to the kind of the specific details of what I think is going to make him a really good coach, I think there's a lot to like about that as well. I went back and pulled a press conference that he had done from, you know, I listen to some stuff right before their bowl game in the Liberty Bowl. I listened to some stuff kind of right after kind of he started his season there at West Virginia this past year. And I want to give you a couple of clips of Adai talking about his philosophy on defensive backs, the position he'll be coaching at UGA. There's some really good stuff here. First of all, when it comes to what specifically Adai is looking for from a cornerback, what kind of physical specs does he want these guys to have? Pretty detailed answer from Jamal Adai, the new Georgia defensive backs coach, on that. Take a listen.
Every corner coach, every DB coach is going to tell you they want the tall, long kid. And quite frankly, we all do. I mean, that's huge, right, for us to be able to have the length. I think anytime you have length, if you lack something, whether it be, you know, being great at the line of scrimmage or even as you get, you know, downfield, maybe not great speed, it's still hard to get the ball in because there's obviously a large radius around them in which they're able to get to the football. And then when you have both, when you have that radius and that length, and then you also have the athletic ability, it lends to a pretty cool, complete athlete.
I think that's really interesting to talk about the cool, complete athlete that Adai kind of cherishes as in that role, a defensive backs coach at West Virginia, where it seems like a lot of programs like that have to choose one or the other. You can have the lateral quickness or you can have the size. But at the West Virginia level, let's face it, oftentimes they're not getting a chance to recruit both of those components. The big athlete with the long arms who's tall, who also runs really well and has that kind of lateral quickness, you just don't get a lot of that at very many programs other than a small few. Obviously, Georgia is one of those places where that kind of talent can be provided, and Adai at Georgia gets a chance to coach that up. Now, let me let you hear one more from him because this is really interesting. He's talking here about, you know, kind of how you determine who a cornerback is going to be and who a safety is going to be. And in this particular quote, it's not very long from Adai, but in this particular quote, I think you really get an appreciation for how much he's going to value ball skills, getting to the football, maybe knocking the ball out of the air. I think this is really interesting as well in terms of who's going to be my cornerback and who's going to be my safety and how do I decide between the two. More from Jamal Adai.
For many defensive back coaches, and I know for myself, you always, anytime you get a DB, you want to make him show you that he can't play corner or that he has a skill set that fits elsewhere. But obviously corner is a position in which you've got to have somewhat of a natural feel. And so we usually try the guys out there first.
So, you know, once again, this is not in reference to anything at Georgia. This is going back months ago to when he was defensive backs coach at West Virginia. But obviously the words that Adai uses there are easy to translate and what's going to happen at UGA. And as we've said before, modern defense is not how few points per game you allow or how few yards you give up, because against the very best offenses, you're just not doing that a bunch. You know, the very best offenses right now just have an edge, whether it's because of the rules or because of whatever else. Modern offenses seem to have an edge over defenses. So what good defense is in 2021 is making individual plays that negates some of that offensive advantage. That means in times it comes from the pass rush. That means at times it comes from, as we've said before, passes defended. You know, pass in the air, finding a way to knock it down, maybe finding a way to pick that ball off. That's as important as anything in football. No one against, you know, Mac Jones and these huge offense in the SEC is going to limit them to, you know, a small number of passing yards. It may just be impossible. But can you do what LSU found a way to do in 2019, which is make a few plays here and there, your own havoc-type plays that negate the explosive plays on the other offense? It sounds like when you listen to some of Adai's press conferences that he gave as West Virginia coach, that he certainly understands the way in which, you know, ball skills and cornerbacks and safeties who can knock balls out of the air and really go to the football, how valuable that can be in a league like the SEC. And I think that Georgia made itself a really good hire here. We'll look forward to learning even more about Jamal Adai in the time to come. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. You know, Marco's is America's most beloved pizza. It's real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. It's baked in a 450-degree oven, then delivered to you contactless and touchless right after that. So your health and safety of a paramount concern from our friends there at Marco's Pizza. And they also offer great deals for you as well, including this combo offer right now. You can get a large specialty pizza. We've told you about these before. And a large two-topping pizza. That's just $23.99 right now. Unbelievable savings from our friends at Marco's Pizza. You can get your carryout or delivery order in today. Go to the Marco's app, which is a great resource to have right there on your device, or go to Marco's.com as well. It's Marco's Pizza delivering Around the Doghouse to us here today. All right, before we are done on today's show, I'm going to talk more about the Tennessee situation as Josh Heupel was officially announced as a Vols coach yesterday. There's also a lot more coaching movement, including a very interesting situation at Florida that I want to make sure your attention is on. We'll pay close attention to that before we are done on today's show. And we'll welcome back the Gator Hater Countdown. We're really looking forward to doing that today, too. So we got a lot to do before we are done. But for now, on the new Georgia schedule, on the new defensive backs coaching hire, and everything else in between, let's talk to our buddy Terrence Edwards right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And boy, it's a real treat to get a chance to talk some Georgia football with Terrence Edwards here on the program today. Terrence, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate that, and I hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing well. Thanks, B. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I don't know how much you've had a chance to kind of pay attention to the new defensive backs coaching hire at Georgia, Jamal Adai, but, you know, this is a guy, Terrence, that I said that I really didn't know anything about until a couple of days ago. He kind of popped up on the rumor mill as maybe someone that Georgia might be interested in. You start reading about him. Wow, statistically speaking, very good defense at West Virginia after some pretty challenging situations that the Mountaineers dealt with in the offseason. By the way, there aren't very many teams that played much defense in the Big 12, so that in itself may be a bit of a headline that he was one of the few guys that found a way to kind of get that done. Sharp guy, you know, we played some audio before you came on, a guy that really seems to have a good idea of what he's looking for here. He was someone that was not on my radar until a few days ago, but I got to tell you, based on what I've kind of learned about him recently, I think there's a lot to like about this new coaching addition for UGA.
I think so. I've actually done a little research on him myself, and I went back and saw that he actually played against us back in the bowl game back in 2004, the Sugar Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. 2005 or 6 when DJ Shockley was the quarterback, so he caused the fumble. So I think Kirby did, you know, his extensive work and went out and found the best guy. I think it also has to be like we talked about. I think he's from what I've read, a really good coach and a recruiter. So I think we got both when we spoke about do we get one or the other.
Right.
I think he found a guy who could do both.
Yeah, and I love the idea that he's seemingly really sure of what he wants. Style of play, you know, he's kind of talked about, you know, the value of effort and intensity, which is, you know, very similar to what most coaches say. But he seems to put his money where his mouth is out there on the field, because what he was pushing these West Virginia guys to do a year ago, they found a way to actually go out there and get that done. You can't deny the results, you know, leading the nation a year ago in terms of passing yards allowed in a league like the Big 12, where it seems like everybody throws the ball as much as they want to.
Correct. I think if you can lead the league and be the best defensive back core in the Big 12 when they throw the football, he's going to bring that same energy here. I'm not saying that we're going to have better players, but I think he's going to have overall better group that he's probably had at his previous stop. So I'm very excited about this hire. Look forward to see what he can do with the young guys who I'm very high on, and Ringo and Jalen Kimber and those guys. I'm ready to see what he can do with that group of talent.
Let me talk to you about this from a second from the standpoint of obviously your area of expertise as a wide receiver. You as a player, what is it that you don't want to see from defensive backs? And obviously that means that's what Adai is trying to coach his guys up to do. Or for the guys that you're coaching right now, what makes it tough for them? Is it the raw speed? Is it the physicality? Is it the technique with which a defensive back kind of plays? What is good defensive back play in your mind, so much so that it just makes it more challenging for wide receivers, especially in the day and age that we're in right now where it just seems like wide receivers have a little bit of a built-in advantage? What is, in your mind, the idea of a wide receiver, what he does not want to see from an opposing DB?
Right now, it's a very patient DB. I always teach my receivers to be patient at the line, but if you got a very technical sound, DB, that's the ones that you don't really want to see. You know, the physicality right now, I mean, let's just be honest, B.A., they're taking the physicality out of the game right now. So you don't have Thomas Davis back there at the back end anymore. You don't have those type of big safeties anymore who's coming down just, you know, tearing your head off when I play. But when you got a defensive back crew that can cover, that is very technical sound, that once you give him all your best moves, he steals there in your right hip, those are the guys that you don't want to see. I would love to see the big guys who don't move well in the back end. Now, it's I don't think being, you know, the taller guys gave me problems. It was the shorter guys that just as quick as me.
That's really interesting. Would you mind talking a little bit more about when you say patience, whether it be on the side of the receiver, on the side of the defensive back, in those battles out there on that perimeter, what specifically does patience mean?
Patience means back when I played, most guys really wanted to be physical with a lot of hand jab at the line of scrimmage. Nowadays, most DB coaches are teaching to use your feet first before your hands. And as a receiver, I'm giving him my best 1-2 jab steps, slide releases, all the releases that I'm teaching. And the defensive back still has not used his hands yet. That's a patient defense back. So now once that I accelerate out of my cut or out of my jab, now the defensive back could put his hands on you. That means he's patient at the line of scrimmage. He was waiting on all the moves that you're going to give him to try to defeat him at the line of scrimmage, and he still hasn't used his hands yet. That means he's been taught well to use his feet first and hands second.
That's really interesting, Terrence, and I think a really great explanation. Very easy for even someone like me to understand on that. Let me shift gears. Schedule comes out yesterday. You know, it's pretty much what we thought it would be. And to me, Terrence, as I said before you joined us, I think two things were kind of validated. That, you know, obviously this is the kind of schedule in which it's not so difficult that all of a sudden, you know, winning a championship for Georgia becomes a less likely occurrence. I actually feel like the schedule, even by SEC standards, is fairly navigable for Georgia here. But the one thing that was also reinforced, that Clemson game to start the year, gigantic because of what's going to happen after that. The Florida game on October the 30th, just because of all the ramifications that game's going to have, that's going to be gigantic there as well. Really, both those things were kind of reinforced for me that this is a schedule that Georgia can get through as long as it shows up and plays really well in its big games. Would you kind of agree with that?
I definitely do. I think, you know, the barometer is going to be set that first game. We all know what Clemson stands for. And this is a team I wish we could play every year. I mean, the proximity for both of the schools is very it's like an hour away from each other. So I wish we could play them more. But this is going to be a measuring stick to, you know, where the offense can be, where the defense can be. And if we go out and play the way I think that we could play, and I think the way the offense is going to maturate, and I think some of the young guys on defense is going to mature, and we win that game, I think that's going to set us in the right direction. Even if we don't win, if we go out and play well and we can see the improvement, it's going to be, you know, set up for a very exciting finish to the rest of the season.
You've said this before, that your 2002 team, one that won the SEC, started the year against Clemson. How much easier do you think a big game like this against a team on the other side that is also itself a national championship contender, how much easier, or maybe not, is that game made by the fact that you do have, theoretically anyway, all off season to get ready for it?
You know, like you said, in 2002, our first game was against Clemson. It's a big game for everybody. I mean, we talked about that game all year. It's the Clemson Tigers, and now with them having a couple of national championships on their belt and a couple of national championship appearances, those guys know that this is going to be a big game, and that's all the offseason is going to be about. It's probably going to be every plaster around the weight room. It's beat Clemson, so we're on to Clemson now. The guys know that, you know, they go in and beat Clemson. That is a stepping stone to where they want to be. It's not the end-all, be-all, but if you beat a team like Clemson to start your season off, it can propel you to some greater things down the road.
Do you think it's easier to, or maybe more motivating to do the offseason workouts if it is Clemson week one, as opposed to a UAB or a Charleston Southern or someone like that? Do you think the weight room work goes better, the timing work between quarterback, wide receivers, that kind of stuff? You think it's made easier to do by the fact that you've got that big name brand opponent looming on week one?
I think so. I think once you, you know, you're working for the big bad bullets on the block, and that's, let's just be real, that's Alabama, that's Clemson, that's Ohio State, and you get opportunity to go against one of the big boys on the block right now. The you know, the talk in the locker room right now, the talk is, you know, Clemson is next. That's the next opponent on your schedule. So let's go out and just be as perfect as we could be. Let's work as hard as we could be. Let's be the best leaders on this team we could be. It's extra motivation, and we know what Clemson represents right now, and this off season is, that's going to be the talk in the locker room. We got Clemson first game, so let's get ready.
Before I let you go, I got to ask, as a former wide receiver, how proud are you of what Mecole Hardman has done at the NFL level, about to be back in the Super Bowl again for a second time with the Kansas City Chiefs? How much fun is that for you to see the success that he's really enjoying, really representing UGA there at the NFL level, doing great things for the Chiefs? Well, you know, What have your thoughts been about that?
And, you know, Meekhold is like a little brother. I mean, Meekhold is one of the receivers that I talk to. I'm not saying a lot, but I talk to from time to time and send him a message here and there. Once we had the tragedy at Pace with one of our players having a traumatic brain injury, Meekhold is one of the guys that I call to just to send him a message, to send him some encouraging words. Because the Kansas City Chiefs actually sent Jordan Sloan a football, and I had Meekhold just to, you know, call his mom. And so he's a guy that, you know, I'm very proud of. And, you know, we all saw the punt that he muffed, but he came back in vengeance and had a great game. And that's just a testament of what type of football player he is. And to get another Super Bowl and two years in a row would just be awesome, something for him and his family.
Hey, let me give you one more chance here, because I want people to know the stuff that you've got going on. Obviously, you know, doing great work as a personal receivers coach out there right now. You explained the game to us a moment ago, and you obviously kind of showed your coaching side on that. So remind folks how they can get in touch with you, because I think that for the people who want to play the game the right way and really want to further their own skill set to the best they possibly can, having someone like you working with them is something I would definitely recommend. So tell folks how they can get in touch with you.
On all social media platforms, that's Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Terrence, great stuff. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp today. I will look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks. Thank you, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Boy, love that chance to talk to Terrence Edwards. Just really good stuff. We're lucky to have those kinds of resources here on our program, and I certainly appreciate his time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp today. Let me also do a quick shout-out here to my friends at Classic City Lager. You know, we're Thursday. We're essentially thinking weekend, right? You kind of have that on your mind a little bit. Well, nothing goes better with weekends than my friends Creature Comfort Brewing Company, obviously an Athens original. I love that snow tire facility right there in downtown. And I love the fact that you don't have to be in Athens to enjoy their craft-style lager, Classic City Lager. A lighter beer, but no sacrifice on flavor. The same crisp, bold taste that you would kind of expect from a Creature Comforts product. Obviously, the craft brewers that they are, you know, the special care they take with every single one of their brews. Classic City Lager is really no different. It's just good, cold beer. They work hard to make that true. It's a simple, easy beer to drink, but the work, the complexity behind the scenes to make it happen is obviously something they've chose to make their life work. So, their life's work. So whatever retail you're going to pick up your groceries here this weekend, enjoy yourself some Classic City Lager from Creature Comforts Brewing Company. It's available in 6 and 12 pack cans, and this is one of those that you can get all year long. So make sure you check out some Classic City Lager today. All right, I want to go off script just slightly for a couple of seconds. So I have been fascinated by the last couple of days by this GameStop thing. Have you been watching this? Like so much so that I've been like watching like CNBC, Bloomberg, things like that way more than I ever did before. Now I'm going to try to sort of succinctly explain this the best that I can, and then I want to kind of make a point here around SEC football. The basic gist of it is this, is that GameStop is a video game store that's like largely connected to malls, retail facilities, things like that. Things aren't really doing so well right now. So a lot of, you know, smart investors have decided that they think that GameStop is no longer a very good stock, so they're essentially shorting that stock, which in very broad general terms means they are betting against the stock, betting on the company to fail, in other words. So a bunch of, you know, would-be, you know, young, in many cases, young investors on, like, Reddit boards and things like that have decided that they are going to bet against the GameStop short. And they've driven the stock up. At last check, the thing was, like, more than $300-something dollars per share or whatever else. It's just been, like, this amazing thing to watch. And what's kind of amazing to me is, and this is where I'm going to kind of bring this back to SEC football, is that the narrative that you hear from a lot of pundits on television is that somebody needs to step in and stop this. Because the, you know, in many cases, young investors who are driving this price up don't know what they're getting into. They're eventually going to get hurt, and they're eventually going to lose everything. That's kind of the sort of the pundit's take on this. Now, I'm not going to give you my opinion on any of this kind of stuff because it could feel a little bit political if I did. But that's just kind of the general sense that's out there. But here's what I think is fascinating: that the youngs, in many cases young, they're not all young, but let's just use that stereotype for a moment. The young investor who supposedly could lose everything, I think for many of these folks, they don't feel like they have anything to lose. Compare their life to mine. You know, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I have a job, I have a mortgage, I have things like that. And all those things in my life make me somewhat risk averse. Whereas if you don't have those things, and many of the people on these Reddit boards do not, all of a sudden you say, well, if I do go for a ride on this and eventually lose it, what have I really lost when I don't really have a lot that's kind of, you know, tethering me to anything? They're essentially using the fact that they have, quote, nothing to lose to their advantage. Now, let me make a comparison to that with the situation at Tennessee football, because yesterday you saw Josh Heupel meet with the media, introduced by new athletic director Danny White. And all of this was very by the book, very establishment, very much the same way that big SEC programs have been rolling out coaches for years and years and years. And it kind of brings to mind for me a conversation that's been going on around the SEC, you know, and college football circles now for a while. Sports radio, things like that, of is Tennessee still a top 25 job? Is this still one of the programs that's kind of, you know, among the elite category in the SEC? And certainly the way that Tennessee conducted this press conference yesterday would lead you to believe that they feel that they are one of those programs. You know, they certainly kind of went about their business yesterday trying to portray the image of the way that big programs roll out, top 25 programs roll out a brand new head coach. But what I was kind of thinking about all this is, wouldn't it just be better if they just pretended that they weren't one of those anymore, whether they are or not, whether Tennessee is still a top 25 job or not? Wouldn't it be more interesting if they just pretended they weren't? Wouldn't it be interesting if they adopted the mindset of, hey, the fact that we quote unquote may have nothing to lose, maybe that's also an advantage for us as well. Let me give you just a very quick comparison here for a moment. Think about Ole Miss and Mississippi State. These are two programs that, from a job standpoint, from a program standpoint, I would say are far down the ladder in comparison to Tennessee, which has financial resources and history and everything else. And yet, when you look at the way in which Ole Miss hired its last coach, as a, for instance, Lane Kiffin, all of a sudden, the fact that they had nothing to lose, we're only Ole Miss, we've been bad before, who cares if we're bad again, let's roll the dice and let's bring in someone who might be exciting. All of a sudden, that gives Ole Miss a nimble characteristic that the big power program Tennessee, I think, is only envious of. Now, I'm not a fan of Mike Leach. Some of you are, though, and what Mississippi State did with its own coaching hires, the same thing. In fact, the Leach issue may even be a better comparison here, because Tennessee was essentially told it, you know, it was a non-starter to even consider hiring Mike Leach when it hired Jeremy Pruitt a moment ago. So Tennessee is still trying to be the top 25 program. They're still trying to roll out the very careful hire, risk-averse, Danny White trying to put on the suit and look like the power program SC, you know, athletic director is supposed to look like. But much like the Reddit investors, it would almost be better for Tennessee if they kind of adopted more of an Ole Miss, Mississippi State mindset of the fact that we have nothing to lose, the fact that we've been bad for so long is actually an advantage, and we're going to roll the dice and really try to be more aggressive in doing something that the rest of the SEC might find a little distasteful. For instance, hiring someone like Hugh Freeze. I mean, can you really say that had Freeze been introduced yesterday at a Tennessee press conference, it would have been worse than, you know, bringing a guy like Heupel, who's in 3 years as head coach at UCF, seen his record go down in all three of those years, and, you know, someone who had almost no juice during the coaching carousel time before being hired to Tennessee, was not really very thought, you know, really thought of as a big time hire by anybody. It's just kind of my two cents on that. It seems like Tennessee yesterday was trying very hard to be something that right now they're not. It's not an establishment program anymore. This is not, you know, one of the elite top 25 type jobs right now based on how much program regression there has been over the last 10 years. So I think if they were smart, they'd use that we've got nothing to lose status to their advantage. All right, let me do a couple of other SEC through stories here really quick, and I'm going to try to make a few of these pretty quick. By the way, speaking of Tennessee, former coach Jeremy Pruitt has now landed a job. He will now be on the New York Giants coaching staff. There have been some chatter he may be going to the Jets. It's going to be the Giants instead for him. I can only imagine how it's going to be like. If I'll date myself with this reference, remember like Crocodile Dundee, the movie from the 80s, when the guy from Australia like showed up in New York City? Like Pruitt feels like kind of a fish out of water in NYC type thing like that there as well. I mean, can you imagine what folks up there are going to think about Pruitt once they kind of finally kind of get a taste of him? I can only imagine what that's going to be like. Other coaching movement off the Tennessee roster here. We talked about the possibility that Jay Graham may be in the mix for Alabama before. Looks like now it is a tight end special teams opportunity that Graham could get there as a part of the Alabama staff. Of course, Jeff Banks, the guy who was in that role before, is now over at Texas. That was a pretty big coup by Steve Sarkisian. So Alabama turning to the Tennessee staff, it looks like, for a replacement on that. Here's a story worth paying attention to. This one hasn't gotten a ton of attention. So Brian Johnson, the Florida quarterbacks coach, is leaving, reportedly, to go be quarterbacks coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. And it looks like Florida's going to promote from within there. Garrett McGee, a guy who was an analyst for the Gators last year, may get that job. But this is probably worth paying attention to. Now, listen, Dan Mullen is the play caller for Florida, so I don't think that the Florida play calling misses anything with all of this. But Johnson's been around with Mullen for a while now. And as Florida tries to break in a new quarterback, you know, a lot of people think it'd be Emory Jones. There's been some chatter of, you know, could it possibly be Anthony Richardson who overtakes Emory Jones in that quarterback battle? But the absence of Brian Johnson as quarterback's coach here could be something worth watching. A little bit of continuity kind of taken away from the Florida staff here. Here's the other thing worth paying attention to as well. Now, listen, you know, maybe I'm wrong about this, but doesn't it seem like we've got a lot of coaches at the position coach level leaving college for the NFL right now? Tracy Rocker, Brian Johnson. There was another guy from South Carolina just the last couple of days leaving to go to the NFL. We've got a lot of guys, it seems, who are kind of at that, you know, sort of position coach level, SEC programs like that, that seem to be right now looking to get to the NFL. I'm not going to try to prescribe the reason why, whether it's related to the frustrations of not being able to recruit because of the lockdowns or the, you know, potential changes coming to college football or whatever else, nor am I, you know, 100% sure that the exodus from college to NFL is as substantial as it appears to be. But it sure does seem like we got a lot of guys right now who are on their way out of the ranks of college football. That could be a story worth watching. I'll also briefly mention this. Eric Gray, former Tennessee running back, has found a new home going to Oklahoma. So Sooners needed a running back. They get one. The person of Eric Gray will make that your SEC through. And as we wrap up here today, let me also remind you, which, whether you're watching hoops this weekend, you got the SEC Big 12 showdown, getting ready for the Super Bowl the following week. Don't forget, best way to enjoy all of that is get some money down with my friends at MyBookie. Big player deposit, up to 50% back in your account. Just use the promo code DOGNATION. Here's how it works. Find the find MyBookie online, type that in your browser. Promo code Dog Nation. You get a big first deposit bonus when you do that. You play, you win, you get paid after that. My friends at MyBookie use the promo code Dog Nation. By the way, do not forget to continue to submit your Gator Hater roll calls. I got some great ones. I'm short on time today, so I'm not going to give one out today. But we're going to keep giving our golden shoe winner away. So hit me up on Dog Nation Daily for that. Here's the reason why we are going to scrap golden shoe for today. Because for the first time in a long time, we welcome back the Gator Hater Countdown. 275 days to Georgia gets a chance for revenge at Florida. We can't wait for that. We'll see you tomorrow at Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.